ॐ असतो मा सद्गमय, तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय, मृत्योर्मा अमृतं गमय। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। त्वमेव माता च पिता त्वमेव, त्वमेव बन्धुश्च सखा त्वमेव, त्वमेव विद्या द्रविणं त्वमेव, त्वमेव सर्वं मम देव देव। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। कस्तूरितिलकम् ललाटपटले वक्षस्थले कौस्तुभम्, नासाग्रे वरमौक्तिकम्, करतले वेणुः, करे कङ्कणम्, सर्वाङ्गे हरिचन्दनम्, सुललितं कण्ठे च मुक्तावली, गोपस्त्रीपरिवेष्टितो विजयते गोपालचूडामणिः। अस्ति स्वस्तरुणी कराग्रविकलत् कल्पप्रसूनाप्लुतम्, वस्तु प्रस्तुत वेणुनादलहरी, निर्वाणनिर्व्याकुलम्, स्रस्तस्रस्तनिबद्ध नीविविलसत्, गोपी सहस्रावृतम्, हस्तन्यस्तन तापवर्गमखिलोदारम्, किशोराकृति। सो टुडे we are supposed to cover the Prahlada Charitram, which is the Narasimha Avataram portion. And before that, I thought I'll take 2 minutes to just summarize what Bhagavatam is all about, why we are studying Bhagavatam and the importance of Bhagavatam. This I had already covered in the second day, but I thought I'll do a short repeat. See, Vedavyasa, Maharshi Vedavyasa, he is also called Bhagavan Vedavyasa. He is a very important rishi in our parampara. Now, he was the one who classified the entire body of Vedas into Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda and Atharva Veda. Before Vyasa's time, anybody who had to study the Vedas had to study all the 4 Vedas as one body of knowledge. And Vyasa had realized that over a period, humanity had become very weak in its mental capabilities, memories not so good. So he felt that in the future, if this is to continue, then people will stop studying the Vedas. People may not have interest in Vedas. So to maintain the life and longevity of the Vedas and to make sure that it is not lost in time, he simplified the study of Vedas by dividing it into 4 portions. Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda, and then gave it to 4 of his main Sishyas and told them to preserve these 4 branches as 4 branches. And after that, he had also written a lot of Vedic works in terms of, he had contributed a lot of Puranas, he had written Bhagavatam, he had written Mahabharata, he had written, and inside Mahabharatam, he had written Bhagavad Gita, and he had also written Brahma Sutra, which is a very important work in the understanding of the Upanishadic teachings. But even after all of this, he was not very happy, and one day he was sitting in the banks of River Saraswati and thinking about why he was not feeling satisfied and happy. And then at that time Narada Rishi comes and they have a conversation. And then Narada tells him that, hey Vyasa, whatever you have written so far, they are all meant for very highly qualified and educated people with lot of intellectual capabilities. But you have to write something which will cater to the masses, the not so educated, the not so qualified people, which will be very simple to understand and still they can worship the Lord through your work, whatever you are going to do. Because most of the texts that Vyasa had written, they are all devoted to Nirgunam Brahma, which is more of an abstract concept, and not everybody can understand Nirgunam Brahma so easily. So he said that you write something which will be simpler to understand for the not so educated and the common people, and with that I think you will achieve the aim of your life. So with that intent, Vyasa Rishi starts writing Bhagavatam, and in Bhagavatam all the stories, it's actually a compilation of many stories, and all these stories are centered on Lord Narayana, Lord Vishnu, and there are many portions in which the various qualities and attributes, the lakshanas or gunas of Lord Narayana are described, and with these descriptions one can visualize the Lord and do meditation upon the Lord, and the various leelas that Narayana had performed in various avatars, especially the Krishna avatara, they are so beautiful and so well written that this reading this can create a kind of love and affection towards the Lord. So with that intent, Vyasa Rishi had written Srimad Bhagavatam, and he taught it to his son Shuka Maharshi, and Shuka Maharshi at one point had the occasion to teach this to the king Parikshit, who had only 7 days to live. He had the curse of a Brahmin. So he knew he had only 7 days to live, and he in these 7 days, he wanted to do something which will take him to the Moksha Loka, the higher Lokas. And so with that intent, he prays, and Shuka Maharshi comes there and teaches Parikshit the entire Bhagavatam in 7 days on the banks of River Ganga. And so that is how Bhagavatam became famous. And the right method to, in the first class also I said, the Bhagavatam, if one has to listen, it should be listened, the complete Bhagavatam should be listened in 7 days. That is called Saptaham. And though we don't have the, ability to do full day Saptaham for 7 days, we're trying to do something at a much smaller level in the form of 7 weekends, 7 weeks or 7 days with 1 hour, 1.5 hours. So by learning Bhagavatam, one gets kind of motivated to follow the bhakti marga, the bhakti path, and eventually reach moksha. So this is the background for Bhagavatam. And regarding the Prahlada Charitram, in the Bhagavatam, the context in which the Prahlada Charitram is introduced is from the time Yudhishthira performs the Rajasuya Yaga, Rajasuya Yajna. So in the Mahabharata, at one point, Duryodhana allows Pandavas to build their own city called Indraprastha. For that, they destroy the forest called Kandava Vanam. And then after building the palace, they invite all the kings and perform a Rajasuya Yaga. And in that Rajasuya Yaga, all the elders and all the very powerful kings and everybody is assembled. Lord Krishna is also assembled. And in the Rajasuya Yaga, the tradition is that the performer of the yajna, that is Yudhishthira, has to choose one king and do the first puja for that king. That is the tradition. But he was in a dilemma because almost everybody who was assembled in that hall were all very great people. Bhishma Pitamaha was there, Drona was there, Dhritarashtra himself was there, and so there were a lot of families. Vidura was there, and Lord Krishna was there. So he was not able to decide whom to invite for that first puja. And then Bhishma Pitamaha himself says that, you know, of all the people assembled here, Lord Krishna is the one who is most eligible for that puja. So you must perform puja to Lord Krishna. And with this, Yudhishthira, you know, invites Lord Krishna and performs the first puja to be done in that yajna. Then what happens? Among all the kings in assembled, there is one Shishupala and there is one Dantavaktra who are sworn enemies of Lord Krishna. And they don't like this idea that Krishna is invited to perform the Rajasuya Yajna. And so Shishupala gets up and starts abusing Lord Krishna, you know, in a very poetic language. And he abuses Krishna non-stop for, you know, 100, 200 times. And Shishupala has a background. He's actually Krishna's own cousin. And when Shishupala was born, the baby Shishupala had a lot of disfigurations. He had three eyes and he had some, very non-human features. Like he had some four hands or six hands or something like that. And then the mother was terrified because the boy was supposed to be born a normal human child, but then the boy was born like this with three eyes and all that. So she didn't know what to do. And then Narada, as usual, comes there and says that whoever, you know, when you know, a lot of people come and visit the child, they want to see the baby, and you give the baby to that person and they keep the baby in their hand. So he says, in whosoever hand, when you give this child, these three eyes vanish, he will be the killer of your son. Okay, so on the one hand, the person who takes the baby and makes the eyes vanish will make the child normal. But at the same time, he will also end up being the killer of that, boy. So this lady is a little, she's worried. On the one hand, she wants the child to be normal. But then she knows if this is going to happen, the boy is going to be killed at some point. And then a lot of people come to visit the baby and then she gives the child to everybody and nothing happens. Finally, Krishna as a boy, you know, Krishna is probably 10, 12 years old at that time. And he comes and he wants to play with the boy and he lifts the boy. And the moment Krishna lifts the boy, the child becomes completely normal. So the three eyes disappear and the boy becomes totally normal. Then the mother realizes, okay, he's going to die at the hands of Krishna. So at that time, she tells Krishna that you must give me a boon. You must grant me a boon that you should not kill this boy unless he abuses kind of more than 100 times or something like that. So he has a limit. He is not supposed to abuse Krishna beyond 100 times. So Krishna agrees. And so in this Rajasuya Yajna, Shishupala goes on and on and on. He is abusing Krishna with all kinds of choice words. And at one point, Krishna wanted to fulfill his promise to the mother that he has exceeded this limit, so I'm going to kill him. So he takes his chakrayuda and kills Shishupala on the spot. Okay, when this happens, everybody assembled in the court are seeing that a light emerges from Shishupala's body and enters Lord Krishna and unites with him. So symbolizing that Shishupala has become liberated and merged with Krishna. Okay, so this is something that Yudhishthira is not able to understand. He says, look, this fellow always had enmity towards you. He was always treating you like an enemy. He was always abusing you. And you killed him because of that. Now he is merged into you. What is this happening? Can somebody who is your abuser also be blessed by you? That was the question that Yudhishthira asked. And this question he asks to Narada. Narada is also in that sava. And Narada at that point says that in order to be blessed by the Lord, it is not necessary that you must only do bhakti. There are several ways of, you know, being blessed by the Lord. And it's a very interesting part. We should not misuse this, but this is just coming from the Bhagavatam, so I'm just reading it for you. So he says, the Gopikas were blessed by the Lord because of their love to the Lord. And Kamsa was blessed by the Lord because of his fear to the Lord. So Kamsa was always fearing because he knew from the Ashariri that he is going to be killed by the eighth son of Devaki, which was Krishna. And so he was always terrified of the thought of Krishna and he was always thinking of Krishna. And Shishupala was always thinking of Krishna, even though he was treating Krishna as an enemy. As an enemy, Krishna was always in Shishupala's thoughts. Okay, and that he gives some examples. So the Yadava Kula people who are relatives of Krishna will get moksha or blessing from Krishna because of their physical relationship with Krishna. And Pandavas will get moksha by way of your friendship with Krishna. And he tells about himself, rishis like me will get blessing from Lord Krishna by way of our bhakti and all that. Cool. So this story, when Narada says, tells to Yudhishthira is curious to know what made Shishupala, he wants to know the background of Shishupala. Then Narada tells the story that there were actually two gods of Vaikuntha. Lord Narayana's abode is Vaikuntha, and there are two gatekeepers, Vijaya and Jaya, and Shishupala and Dantavaktra were once upon a time the gatekeepers of Vishnu, Jaya and Vijaya. And when they were guarding the gates of Vaikuntha, one day the Sanakadi Rishis come there. Sanakadi Rishis are four Rishis who, in fact, they were the very first creations of Lord Brahma. But even though they were the very first creations of Lord Brahma, they look like five-year-old kids. And they move around without any clothes. And they come to visit Vaikuntha. And this Jaya and Vijaya, they don't know the glory of Sanakadi Rishis. So they stop these people and say, no, 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 you are all kids. You cannot enter Vaikuntha. So the Sanakadi Rishis become angry and they give a curse to Jaya and Vijaya. And they say, you people don't know anything about who is coming and who is going. You are without Viveka and Jnanam. So you are fit only to be born as demons. And they curse these two people. But then they give both of them a kind of returning clause that after three janmas as asuras, you will come back to Vaikuntha. So it is these three janmas that they had to spend as asuras in the bhuloka. So in their first janma, they were born as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. And in the second janma, they were born as Ravana and Kumbhakarna. And in the third janma, they were born as Shishupala and Dantavaktra. Now their three janmas are over. Now they have gone back to Vaikuntha. That is the story Narada gives. So with this, Yudhishthira's curiosity is even more increased. And he says, okay, please tell me the story of Hiranyakashipu. What happened to him? Because during the story, Narada says that Hiranyakashipu was killed by the Narasimha Avatara, in which Lord Vishnu appeared in a half lion, half human form. And so that story, Yudhishthira wants to listen to from Narada. So that is where the Hiranyakashipu story starts in Bhagavatam. So this is all just by way of background to where this Hiranyakashipu story is coming. It is in the 7th Skanda of Srimad Bhagavatam, right from chapter 1, I think all the way to chapter 6 or 7, it is all Prahlada Charitra. No, even beyond that. It goes all the way to 9th chapter. So, chapter 1 to chapter 9 of Skanda 7, that is Prahlada Charitra. Okay, now we saw that Jaya and Vijaya have been cursed by Sanakadi Rishi. And as the first Janma among the three Janmas, they are now born to Kashyapa Rishi and Diti. Kashyapa Rishi is the father of all the Devas and also the Asuras. So Kashyapa Rishi has two wives. One wife is Aditi, and all of Aditi's children are Devas. And all of Diti's children are Asuras. And that's why Asuras are also called Daityas. Diti's children are called Daityas, and Aditi's children are called Adityas. So that's a side information. Now when Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha was a younger brother. Hiranyakashipu is the elder brother. And on one occasion, Hiranyakashipu tries to, hide the whole of earth under the water. And then Varahavatara happens, and Varahavatara rescues the earth from underwater. And in that encounter, Varahavatara, Hiranyaksha ends up getting killed by Varahavatara. So Varahavatara and Hiranyaksha have a fight when Varahavatara is trying to rescue the earth, and then Hiranyaksha gets killed. Now that is the point where Bhagavatam actually starts narrating the Hiranyakashipu story. We don't see much details of how Varahavatara ends up killing Hiranyaksha. That detail we don't have in this chapter. It may be in some other part of Bhagavatam, but here it starts with this. So because of Hiranyaksha's death, the whole family is mourning. And Hiranyaksha apparently has left behind his wife and four or five sons. And the mother, Diti, is also very upset that the son is dead. So they are all, mourning. And at that point, Hiranyakashipu comes and gives a long speech. And that speech itself is so, profound that you think that Hiranyakashipu is a jnani, because he talks about a lot of philosophical things in that speech. He's trying to console the mother and the younger brother's family about the dead Hiranyaksha. In that speech, he says, don't worry, this body is temporary, this life is anyway going to go, nobody can kill the Atma, so my brother would have definitely gone to a good gati. I will make sure that he gets a good gati by performing all the tarpanam and all that. And I will also avenge that Vishnu who killed my younger brother. So that is where he makes a pledge that I will kill Vishnu. I will kill Vishnu. You know, in spite of delivering such a good speech, he still has that ignorance that he can somehow kill Vishnu. Okay, so at that point he says, I will kill Vishnu and with his blood I will perform a tarpanam to avenge the death of my younger brother. That is the kind of pledge he takes. And with that kind of a vengeful attitude, he goes out. In fact, he first tells all his soldiers and all his servants and all the asuras that you go out into the world and destroy all the Brahmins and all the temples and make sure nobody performs any puja. Because he says, it is the strength of the pujas and yajnas and mantras that the Brahmins are doing, which gives strength to the devas, which in turn gives strength to Vishnu. So by destroying all the Brahmins, you will make sure that Vishnu is weakened. So with that, he sends all his servants and soldiers and asuras into the world, and they end up burning all the villages, they end up burning a lot of houses of Brahmins, and they do all kinds of atrocities. And this is one part of his vengeance. Then he decides that he will go and do tapasya in the forest. So he goes to the forest and he goes to some place in Himalayas, and there he performs penance for 1000 years. And he is performing a very severe penance, like the typical, similar to the one we saw in the Dhruva Charitram. He stands on one leg and with his toe on the ground, and he doesn't eat anything, and he performs tapas like that for 1000 years. And his body is covered by an ant hill, and his body is completely eaten up by all kinds of ants and insects and other animals. But still he is not bothered, and he is performing that tapas. So we will leave him there for now, and we will return to the wife of Hiranyakashipu. So her name is Kayatu. Yeah, her name is Kayatu. And when Hiranyakashipu leaves for the tapasya, she is about 4 weeks or 6 weeks pregnant. And then because this Hiranyakashipu has gone to the forest for performing tapasya, Indra feels a little bolder. So he says, look, this fellow Hiranyakashipu has gone to the forest for tapasya, and he is going to come back with very powerful boons and all that. And the wife is pregnant, and if she is going to give birth to another Hiranyakashipu, we are going to have a bigger problem. So I will at least kill this woman and make sure that the baby is not born. And he abducts this Kayatu, and he is taking her to Indraloka. On the way, sage Narada interferes and says, no, don't do anything to her. You leave her to me. The Indra has a conversation with her. He says, she is carrying Hiranyakashipu's baby, and tomorrow if this boy is also another big demon, we are all going to have more problems, so I don't want her to survive. Narada says, don't worry, the boy who is going to be born from this lady is going to be a very great Vishnu Bhakta, and he is going to be, in fact, the reason for Hiranyakashipu's death also. So you should not harm her, and you leave her with me. I will take care of her. And Narada takes her to his ashrama, and there this lady is performing Sisrusha to Lord Narada. And during the evening or night times, Narada tells her stories about Lord Narayana. And interestingly, when this lady Kayatu is in Narada's ashrama, she says that I don't want to deliver this baby until my husband comes back from his tapasya. So please give me the boon that I should be able to carry this womb until my husband returns from his tapasya. So Apparently, Prahlada was in Kayathu's womb for 1000 years. This is according to Bhagavatam. Okay. Now, because of the stories of Lord Narayana that, she had listened, the baby in her womb was also listening to all these stories. So, even before Prahlada is born, the baby develops a very strong devotion to Vishnu, Lord Narayana. And when Hiranyakashipu comes back from his tapasya, after getting all those boons from Brahmaji, Kayathu is returned to the palace and the baby is born. Now we have to go back to the tapasya where Hiranyakashipu is doing tapasya. So he has been doing tapasya for 1000 years. And the devas are all very terrified. They say, Brahmaji, you know why he is doing tapasya? He is going to, ask you for your own Brahma Padam. He wants to become the next Brahma. So if you don't stop him now, he is going to create more trouble for all of us. So you better go and stop his tapasya. So with this prayer, Brahmaji comes to the place where Hiranyakashipu is doing tapasya and he asks him to stop the penance, and his body is all completely eaten up, so only the bones are remaining. So Brahmaji takes a drop of water from his kamandalu. He carries a kamandalu with him all the time. So he carries a drop, puts a drop of water and sprays on Hiranyakashipu. He gets a very beautiful and a very strong body. So his body is revived. And then Hiranyakashipu falls at the feet of Lord Brahma and starts praying. There is a very beautiful set of shlokas again, which Hiranyakashipu uses to please Brahma. So Brahmaji has appeared in front of Hiranyakashipu after 1000 years of tapasya. So he wants to make sure that Brahmaji gives him all the best of the boons. So he prays to Lord Brahma and he praises him that, you are the creator of this world and nobody can defeat you. You are protecting all of us. So he gives whatever prayer we normally sing for Vishnu or Shiva, he sings to Lord Brahma. And after that he says, please give me this boon that none of the none of the jivas that you have created can kill me. So the boon he asks is, nothing that is created by Brahma can ever kill Hiranyakashipu. And he adds a lot of clauses. He says, I don't want to be killed at night or day. I don't want to be killed inside the house or outside the house. I don't want to be killed on the ground or on the sky. I don't want to be killed by any animal or any man or any weapon. I don't want to be killed by any living being or any non-living being. Okay, so he thinks he's covered everything. Okay, so he's, the agreement drafted by a team of lawyers. So he has drafted a boon which he thinks is very watertight. And with this boon, Brahmaji says, okay, I'll give you. Because Brahmaji knows that there is somebody whom I didn't create. So I have a fallback clause. So Brahmaji was very clear about his exit. So he said, okay, no problem. Nothing that I have created will be able to kill you. And with this, Hiranyakashipu goes back to his palace and Brahmaji goes back to his Satyaloka. And this fellow starts unleashing terror like nobody has seen before. He conquers all the three lokas and he goes and occupies Indra's palace. And he rules the heavens and he says, he strips all the devas of their powers and takes over all their powers. So he is more or less like the dictator. We know dictators who are confined to one country, but this guy was a global dictator. So he was able to control all of the globe with his single, a centralized power. So like that he was, ruling the planet. And this boy Prahlada is around 5 years of age. And as I said, before, he has acquired a very deep bhakti for Lord Vishnu. And at the age of 5, the children are generally sent to the Gurukula for education. And Hiranyakashipu being the Lord Emperor of the whole cosmos, so he doesn't want to send his son to a Gurukula away from home. So he calls two of Sukracharya's sons and sets up a Patashala right next to his palace. And he makes, all the Asura children also part of that Vidyashala. And these two gurus, they are actually Guru Putras. Sukracharya is the guru of Asurakula. So Hiranyakashipu's guru is Sukracharya. But these two people who are teaching the children, they are the sons of Sukracharya. So these two sons of Sukracharya are running the school for Prahlada and hundreds of Asura children. And they are trying to teach Prahlada whatever they normally teach to the Asuras. And to the Asuras, you don't normally teach Dharma. You only teach all the, what we call Samadana, Bheda, Danda, how to control other people, how to manipulate other people. So these are the kind of things that you know, Shukracharya's sons were teaching to Prahlada and the other children, because in their worldview, this is the education meant for asuras. But Prahlada gets into a kind of conversation with the teacher and says, no, this, all this is whatever you are teaching, that's not correct. And he tries to teach the Shukracharya's sons that, you know, you should tell us about bhakti and you should tell us about the glory of Narayana. And he tries to argue with the Guru Putras. Then these two people get angry and they say, no, who taught you all these things? This is all nonsense. There is nothing like bhakti towards Vishnu. You learn what we are teaching you. And so Prahlada keeps quiet and he quietly listens to whatever they are saying, but he is not convinced. And one day Hiranyakashipu wants to know the progress of Prahlada. He wants to know what he is learning. So he takes Prahlada on his lap and makes him sit there and say, you have been learning something from school all these days. Tell me, what have you learned? Then Prahlada tells him that, you know, I have learned that Lord Vishnu is the controller of everyone. He is the supreme being. And all this world is temporary nature and it is all going to be vanished. And so the best way to live our life is to spend our time in devotion of Lord Vishnu. And hearing this, Hiranyakashipu gets extremely angry, because he had banished Vishnu Puja from all over the earth, and he has, you know, installed his own statues in all the temples, and he has instructed that all temples must worship Hiranyakashipu. So wherever puja is happening, the puja is happening to Hiranyakashipu. And his own son is now telling him that Lord Vishnu is the most supreme, and he is telling Hiranyakashipu to worship Lord Krishna, Lord Vishnu. So he is extremely angry, and he calls the teachers, the two boys, the Shukracharya's sons, and he blasts them. He says, what have you been teaching my son? I sent him to you to teach the proper shastras, and you are teaching him that Vishnu is the most supreme Lord. What is this? You're not being loyal to me. Then they say, no, sir, we didn't teach him all these things. He has learnt it from somewhere else. We were trying to teach him the usual Samadhana Bheda Danda and other shastras, but he's not listening to us. So what he says is, you make sure that he is locked up in the school and he doesn't go anywhere else, and make sure nobody interacts with him, and you teach him in an intensive course. Okay, so he is now locked up in the school, and the teachers are trying to give him some more intense teaching. And as we know, nothing actually enters Prahlada's head, because he is convinced that Lord Vishnu is the supreme, and he is convinced that whatever the two teachers are teaching, it's all not for him. And interestingly, one day the teachers they have gone somewhere, and the Prahlada and other children are left alone in the school, in the locked up school. At that time, Prahlada calls all the students and teaches them whatever he knows. He says that, you know, don't listen to whatever these teachers are teaching. No, they are all teaching complete nonsense. No, you should learn that this world is a temporary thing. Death will come to you anytime. So we are all in the, you know, 5-6 year old time. This is the right time to start learning bhakti and pray to the Lord. Because if you miss this chance, then you will get sucked into samsara and you will not have the time to learn about anything about the God. The children try to, you know, reason out with him. He says, no, one boy stands up and says, you know, my father told me that once I finish my studies, he's going to hand over all the house responsibilities to me. He's going to hand over the khajana key to me and all that. Now, if you tell me to learn Bhagavatam and Bhagavan's story, he may drive me out of the house. So I may end up losing all that control and money that my father is going to give. Then Prahlada says, don't worry. Money is temporary in nature, and money won't take you very far. You look at all those people who are running after money. They don't have time to do anything else. So money is not really the real purpose of life. So you will get money anyway if you learn bhakti of Vishnu. Money will come searching for you. So you don't have to go in search of money. And another boy says, if I start doing bhakti now, where will I get a job? I won't be able to find an employment proper. Hiranyakashipu wants only people who are able to fight and kill others. And if I start learning Bhagavatam and Bhakti from you, then I won't get a job from Hiranyakashipu. And another boy says, if I come and sit and learn from you, I won't get a girl to marry. So who will marry me? So all these kind of conversations happen. And Prahlada convinces all of them and says, look, all these things are not important in life. If you learn bhakti and learn Bhagavatam now, maybe you will get a very good girl who will even take care of your parents. Because then he actually gives a lot of worldly examples and says that if you get married and if your wife is not of a good character, then she is capable of driving away your parents and your relative from your house, and she is capable of, you know, dominating your life. So you have to be very careful what kind of boy, you know, girl you are going to get married to. So if you learn bhakti and if you learn the Bhagavatam and Vishnu's Mahima, there is a good chance that a good girl will get married to you. So he kind of convinces the boys, and finally they all learn from Prahlada whatever he wants to teach. And at one point they all sit and they are all meditating in the school with closed eyes and all that. At that time the guru, the two people who are supposed to be teaching, they come and they find the whole place is like a, you know, dhyana mantapa. And then they are more enraged. So they drag Prahlada to the king and says, look, he is not only not listening to what we are teaching, he is spoiling the other students also. So you must do something to make him, you know, come to line. At that point, Hiranyakashipu is extremely angry. And he says, okay, no, there is no point in trying to reform this boy. He is only to be killed. So even though he is his own son, he, you know, that anger towards Vishnu is kind of... blocked his vision. Yeah, so he is not able to think properly. It has clouded his vision. So he says, I don't care if this is my son. He is teaching, you know, Vishnu Bhakti to all the other students, and that's strict no-no. I have to get rid of this fellow. I'll kill him. So he orders his soldiers to do all that is possible to, you know, somehow physically eliminate him. So they take him to a top of a mountain and, you know, throw him down from there. And when he falls, Bhuma Devi creates a bed of flowers for him, and it makes sure that when he falls down, he's not injured. Okay, then he takes some three or four wild elephants, and he directs Mahout to, you know, make the elephants step over this boy and kill him. But then the elephants are not able to do that, because when they see Prahlada, he appears like a lion to their eyes. So the elephants are terrified of Prahlada, because if they don't see Prahlada, they see a lion, and they run away. And then at another point, Hiranyakashipu gives a pot of poison, deadly poison, gives it to his wife and says, you mix it in food and give it to your son. So he forces the mother to feed poison to the son. And then, you know, the wife being a Pativrata, she cannot refuse the husband's order. So with a lot of tears in her eyes, she goes to the palace and she tries to mix the poison with the food. And the poison is so toxic that even as she is mixing the food, she loses her consciousness 2-3 times and she swoons and falls. But with great difficulty, she mixes the food and then she calls Prahlada. And even as she is trying to tell Prahlada to eat the food, she is crying. So the boy asks, okay, Mama, why are you crying? What is wrong? Then she says, you know, this food is full of poison. Your father told me to give this to you. I didn't want to give it, but I can't disobey your father. So you will die if you eat this food, but I have to make you eat this. So this is the problem. And Prahlada says, don't worry. You know, I am protected by Lord Narayana. Nothing can harm me. So he eats up the whole thing and says, give me some more food with poison. Okay, then the mother sees that nothing happened to the boy, and so she drags the boy along to the court and tells the king, look, you told me to feed poison to this boy. He is eating the whole of the food I gave and he is asking for more. So this boy cannot be killed by normal means. So you please understand, whoever is protecting this boy is also the same Narayana who is protecting you and me and this whole world. So it is time that we, you know, follow his words and do bhakti to Lord Narayana. This is the wife's advice to Hiranyakashipu. Then Hiranyakashipu is even more angry. So he says, look, this is getting too much. Earlier he changed the boy's, the school boy's mind. Now he has changed the mother's mind also. Now this cannot go on like this. So he confronts Prahlada head to head. And he says, you tell me, what is this Narayana all about? You tell me, what do you know about Narayana? Then he says, Prahlada says, Narayana is the one who is protecting me. He is the one protecting you. He is the one protecting this whole rajyam of yours, this whole kingdom of yours. And not just, Lord Narayana is the one who is protecting this whole creation, all the seven worlds. So you cannot deny that fact. You may be the king today, but you will not be the king forever. So you better learn how to accept Lord Narayana into your life and pray to him so that you get a good gati. So Hiranyakashipu will have nothing of that. So he says, okay, tell me, where is this Narayana? And the boy says, he's everywhere. And what do you mean everywhere? I can't see him anywhere. And then, you know, in the court, there are a lot of pillars. You know, it's a huge building. There are at least 1,000 pillars, and each pillar is embedded with a lot of diamonds and other pearls and other precious stones. So he points to one particular pillar and says, tell me, is Lord Narayana in this pillar, in this particular pillar? And Prahlada says, yes, I am in that pillar. Narayana is in that pillar. And before that, Hiranyakashipu asks Prahlada, he takes out his sword and says, look, if I cut your head now, do you think Lord Narayana is going to come back and stitch your head and put it back on your head, shoulder? He says, Prahlada says, no. What do you mean, no? He says, do you think Lord Narayana is going to wait until you cut my head? Even before you cut my head, he will come and stop your hand. So that is the level of confidence Prahlada had in the protection that he is getting from Lord Narayana. And so, pointing to this particular pillar, Hiranyakashipu says, is Lord Narayana in this pillar? And Prahlada says, yes, he is very much there. I can see him with my own eyes. Then he breaks that pillar with his sword. The sword is so powerful that he is able to break that pillar. And from that pillar emerges Lord Narayana in the form of Narasimha. And Lord Narasimha, as the word says, he is a hybrid of lion and human form. So he has a head of lion and a body of human being. And then he has all the other, lakshanas of Lord Vishnu, namely four hands and shankha, chakra and all that. His appearance is very terrible. He's got tongues like a sword, and he's got very powerful nails, like the nails of the lion. He's got very powerful nails. And when this Narasimha emerges from the pillar, it is about 2 hours or so for sunset. So those 2 hours, somehow Narasimha and Hiranyakashipu fight. Because, Narasimha has to kill Hiranyakashipu when it is neither day nor night. So he was waiting for the twilight period when the sun has just set and the night has just not started. So to cover those two hours of time, Narasimha and Hiranyakashipu have a terrible fight. And at the end of that fight, Lord Narasimha simply carries Hiranyakashipu in his hand and walks to the steps of the palace, so that he is neither inside the palace nor outside, and then he sits on the steps and puts him on his thighs, so that Hiranyakashipu is neither on the ground nor on the sky. And with his own hands, with his nails, he tears open his stomach and takes out his intestine and puts it as a garland. This is the scene that is described. So the idea is, because he is destroyed by the nails are neither living nor non-living. You can either call it living or non-living, because you can cut it off. So in that sense, it is non-living. But they grow. In that sense, it is living. So it is neither this or that. And the time when he was killed is neither day nor night. And Lord Narasimha was neither animal nor man. And he was not created by Brahmaji. So all the clauses that Hiranyakashipu had mentioned in his boon, all of them were fulfilled. And Hiranyakashipu's life was brought to an end. With that, all the problems of the Devas and all of the world was over. And but Lord Narasimha is still very angry. The anger was because Hiranyakashipu had threatened and endangered his best bhakta, Prahlada. So he was not able to swallow the fact that one of his bhaktas was in danger. So because of that, he emerged from the pillar, and that anger was still very fresh in his mind. And he goes and sits on Hiranyakashipu's throne with all that anger, and all the Devas try to pacify him. Brahmaji tries to pacify him. They even call Lakshmi Devi to pacify Lord Narasimha, but Lakshmi Devi says, no, I have never seen him in this kind of a ferocious form, so I don't want to come anywhere near. Let him first cool down, then I'll come. So Lakshmi Devi also backs out, and finally all of them, they request Prahlada to pacify Lord Narasimha. So Prahlada goes and falls at Narasimha's feet, and then Narasimha cools down immediately and he takes him on his lap, and then Prahlada sings a very beautiful prayer for about 20-25 shlokas. And as I mentioned in the Dhruva Charitram, this Prahlada Stuti is also a very beautiful section which one can learn by heart and use as daily prayer. And after that, Lord Narasimha cools down and he crowns Prahlada the king, and then he grants him a boon that Prahlada will be Chiranjeevi. Chiranjeevi means the one without death. So he says, Prahlada, you will be a Chiranjeevi and all your descendants will also be Chiranjeevi. So I will not kill any of your descendants. So Prahlada had a son called Virochana, and Virochana story comes in another Puranam, and it also comes in Chandogya Upanishad. In Chandogya Upanishad, there is a story where Brahmaji makes an announcement that I will teach the most sacred of all the Vidyas to whoever comes to me. And so the Devas elect Devendra to go to Brahmaloka, and the Asuras elect Virochana to go to Brahmaloka. So Brahmadeva teaches Brahmavidya to Devendra and Virochana. So that is Virochana's glory. And Virochana's son is Mahabali. And Mahabali was again a very central character in the Vamanavatara, which we will cover maybe next week or the week after. So Vamanavatara's story is how Vishnu in Vamanavatara conquers Mahabali and sends him to Patala. So these are the boons that Prahlada gets, and Prahlada rules after that for many long years, and finally he becomes liberated. He leaves the kingdom and he merges into Lord Vishnu. He goes to Vaikuntha. So this is the story of Hiranyakashipu and Narasimhavatara. I think we have a lot more time. Maybe I'll cover some more story, but before that, any questions? I didn't expect it will end so quickly. I was probably very fast. So any questions, any discussion, or shall we move on to the other story?
What is the benefit of Hiranyakashipu being worshipped by people? Like, what does he gain from this?
What does he gain?
Egoistic satisfaction or anything else?
Okay. See, in the Puranas and in the Bhagavatas, what is mentioned is that whenever you do a puja, you make an offering, and that offering goes to the person to whom it is meant. Okay, so all of us do all kinds of pujas and we worship all kinds of devatas. So the devatas are benefited. In fact, when you do a Shraddha or Tarpana, you are offering to the Pitrus. Who are the Pitrus? Pitrus are your ancestors who are dead and gone. And the tarpanam and the shraddham that you offer in this, in these, the whatever ahuti you give, it reaches those jivas who have been your ancestors, and in whichever lokas they are and in where, whatever form they are, they will be nourished and taken care of by this offering. It is like, suppose I give you money, you can spend that money, right? It's like that. So when the whole world performs puja to Hiranyakashipu, it gives him that kind of spiritual strength. So he is able to enjoy whatever offerings he is getting. It is not a gross offering like giving money or giving food, but it is a subtler offering which transfers a certain punyam to him. Okay, so he is using that kind of spiritual power to control the whole world. So what does he gain? He gains more power. So people are giving him more power. It's like how you vote in an election. Nowadays you give election, you have elections, you vote somebody to power, and he enjoys that power for 5 years. How does he enjoy that? You give some piece of paper and a ballot paper, and that becomes a power to that fellow. It's something like that. Yeah? So there is a subtle power that Hiranyakashipu would get from whatever people are doing. But then you should watch, what you should remember is they were not doing it on their own accord. They were doing it because if they didn't do it, they would be killed. So they were doing it under duress. Okay? No more questions. So we'll go to another portion, which is a very interesting portion. And any questions from the conference?
Okay, I have a question.
Yeah. Tell me.
You mentioned that there are two wives of Kashyapa, Aditi and Diti. What do the names mean?
What do the? Sorry? What is the question? What do the names indicate?
Yeah, what do the names mean?
What do the names mean? I don't know, sir. I have to find out. I really don't know. All that I know is they were called Aditi and Diti, and Aditi's sons are called Adityas, and Diti's sons are called Daityas. And see, there is a... You can interpret it in one way, that the good and bad, you know, Aditi represents the good in us, and Diti represents the evil or bad in us. And by showing that they are both married to the same person, the Shastras are trying to say that the good and the bad are in us, ourselves. So we have the good and the bad in us, and it is up to us to, you know, promote this or that. You know, in the Puranas itself, you will find that at some point, Kashyapa blesses Diti with some powerful children. At some other point, Kashyapa blesses Aditi with some powerful children. So Kashyapa tends to bless both Diti and Aditi. See, Kashyapa is a rishi. He is supposed to know that Diti is not such a good lady and she is going to give birth only to bad children. But still, in spite of it, Kashyapa finds himself compelled or kind of somehow under whatever circumstances, he gets enticed to give some boons to Diti, because of which she gets some powerful children who dominate over Deva. Okay. So what we can understand from this is that when we have the good and bad in us, like Diti and Aditi, we have to make sure that we don't promote the wrong side of our character and try to promote the good side of our character as much as possible. Yes, sir.
Yin and
Yang are not good and bad. That's not the right parallel. Yin and Yang are not good and bad. Yang is supposed to be the male domination character, and Yin is supposed to be the female type of character, where you have patience and you have the the forbearance and all that. So that's not the right comparison. Yin and Yang are a very different set of things. See, and again, I won't say we are all balanced. Okay, we have a bit of that and a bit of this. It can go out of balance. You do have people who have extraordinarily good display of character, and they make sure that their bad side is well under control, and you have people who may be good on some occasions but predominantly bad in character. So whether it is balanced or not, I would say even if it is balanced, it's not good, because you want the good to be dominant. So the idea is not to be balanced. The idea is to make sure that the bad side is suppressed and the good side becomes dominant. Okay, so that is how to take it. So we have to be aware that there is a negative character in us, which we have to be careful about. So that you have to be conscious that whenever you say or do something, you make sure that the negative side doesn't pop up. That is the idea. So Ramji, while I'm not able to answer your question directly, he wanted to know what is the significance of the names Aditi and Diti. So I said, I don't know that, but from an interpretation point of view, this is what I can think of. Any more questions?
I have a question. This is Krishna Prasad. I have seen in Raghavendra Swami Math that during the puja, sometimes Prahalada is used as a Urchamurti. So what is the connection between Prahalada and Raghavendra Swami?
Okay, now there's a question on the conference. He says, he has gone to Raghavendra Swami Matha, and very often there he has seen Prahlada Murti being used as the Puja Murti. And so he wants to know what is the connection between Raghavendra Swami and Prahlada. Okay, Now, Krishna Prasad, I really don't have much background about this particular phenomenon. But what I do know is that Raghavendra Swami was a Narasimha Upasaka. And so there was probably a connection to Narasimha because of his Upasana. And in the Vaishnava tradition, and you know, Madhvas are strong Vaishnavas. They are more Vaishnava than the Vaishnavas themselves. And in the Vaishnava tradition, there is a practice that rather than worshipping the Lord Himself, if you worship a devotee of the Lord, it is more glorious. Okay? So, Bhagavat Seva and Bhagavata Seva, they call it, you know. So they say Bhagavata Seva is superior to Bhagavat Seva. Okay. So, so Prahlada being a you know, a supreme bhakta, it is probably considered to be very auspicious to worship Prahlada because Prahlada is one of the topmost bhaktas of Lord Narayana.
Okay. Yeah? Thank you.
So you had a question, Shukracharya. See, Shukracharya, I think, is the son of Rishi Bhrigu because he's also got a name Bhargava. And if you really want to understand, see, if you read Bhagavatam, you will see that Rishi Bhrigu himself is born several times. You know, in one Janma, he is the son of Varuna. You know, so Varuna, this comes in Taittiriya Upanishad. In Taittiriya Upanishad, Bhrigu, Bhrigurvai Varunihi, it says. So, Bhrigu was the son of Varuna. In another Purana, in Bhagavatam itself, it says Bhrigu is born out of Brahmaji. Okay? Now, one can say that there were different Bhrigus at different points of time. Or, the same Bhrigu had a lot of different Janmas. So, it's very difficult to say which Bhrigu is where. Okay?
And Vyasa is brother of Shukracharya.
No, no. Okay, no, Vyasa has no connection.
Okay.
Vyasa is from the parampara of Vasishtha. So, Brahmaji's son is Vasishtha. Vasishtha's son is Parashara. Parashara's son is Vyasa. And Vyasa's son is Shuka.
Shuka Maharshi.
Okay? So,
Brihaspati and Shukracharya, Brihaspati is Deva's Guru.
Deva's Guru.
Shukracharya is
Asura's Guru.
Brihaspati and Shukracharya, do they have connection?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, ultimately they all emerge from Brahma at some point. Okay. So they all have a parampara which leads to Brahma. So in that sense, you may call them distant cousins or whatever. But, you know, again, Shukra, Guru, Brihaspati, they're all at some level symbolic. And in the Bhagavatam itself, you will see that in different kalpas, in different yugas, there were different Indras. And for each Indra, there were different Brihaspati. So these are all basically roles. Okay, Indra is a role. It's like the prime minister of a country or a president of a country. So in one period, that Indra Padavi is occupied by somebody. In another kalpa, that same Indra Padavi is occupied by somebody else. So that Indra is a position. But if you do enough Punya Karma, you can also become an Indra at some point. Okay, even Brahma Padavi, the four-headed Brahmaji, that is also a Padavi. It's a role. So, if one has enough punyam, you can become a Brahma in one particular kalpa. So, they are all roles for jivas. So, they are all exalted jivas.
Vyasa is also a role. Like one who compares is...
But Vyasa is a person. Because we have a particular history of Vyasa. So, Vyasa is not a role like Indra or Brahma. So, Vyasa is a person. Krishna Dvaipayana is his original name. And Vyasa is a title that he was given because he reclassified the Vedas into these four portions. Vyasa is not his original name. His original name is Krishna Dvaipayana. And he, like you get Padma Shri or Padma Bhushan nowadays, he got a title called Vyasa. Veda Vyasa. He is called Veda Vyasa. Vyasa means one who classifies. One who separates and reclassifies, that is Vyasa. Okay?
Narasimhavatara is also one part of the Dashavataras.
Correct.
But why don't we pray more to Narasimhavataras in temples than like Krishna?
No, you have as many Krishna temples as you have Narasimha temples. In fact, you probably have more Krishna temples than Narasimha temples.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, whether you worship a given form of Vishnu or another form is a purely a personal choice. Okay. Now, there are lots of families who have traditionally worshipped Narasimha. So, for instance, if you go to Orissa and that eastern coast of Andhra also, you have a lot of village temples where Narasimha is a deity. So, there has been a tradition of Narasimha worship in certain parts of the country. And in south also, there is a particular subsect within Vaishnavism, Iyengars, who are called Ahobilamata tradition. And for them, even though they are Iyengars and even though their main deity is Vishnu, they worship Vishnu in the form of Narasimha. Okay? So, it's a personal choice. It's a family tradition. Yeah? And many people like that powerful form of Narasimha. You know, Lord Krishna is not known for his powerful nature. No, he is known for a lot of other things, but he is not one of those fierce and powerful fighters. So if you are kind of enamored by that physical power that Narasimha represents, then you worship Narasimha because you like that power. And you know, in fact, there are more Rama temples, I would say. In the north at least, Vishnu is worshipped more in the form of Rama than even Krishna. Yeah? Okay. So the other story that I thought I would cover today is a conversation that happens between Krishna and Uddhava. Now, Uddhava is a very close friend of Krishna, and he is also a kind of, shall we say, I don't want to call servant. He's a close friend and he is one of his assistants, I would say. And so Uddhava has been with Krishna for a very long time. And in fact, he is the one who is sent by Kamsa to bring Krishna from Nandagopa's house. You know, when Kamsa organizes that festival where he wants to entice Krishna into Mathura, so he knows that Krishna is in, what is that, Vrindavan, no? What is that place called? Where Nandagopala, Yashoda, and Dwaraka. Dwaraka is where Gokulam. Yeah. So, Krishna is in Gokulam. And so, Kamsa invites Krishna to come to the festival that he is organizing. And Uddhava is the one who goes to Gokulam to bring Krishna in the chariot. So, Uddhava and Krishna go a long way back. And we are talking about a time when Krishna has decided to leave this earth and go back to Vaikuntha. And Uddhava comes to know about it. Kuchela and Uddhava are not the same. Yeah. So Uddhava is now worried. Uddhava is now worried that if Krishna goes off and leaves the world, how will how will this world survive? So he's worried and he's also worried about himself. How will I survive without you? So he wants to go and tell Krishna, you please take me also along. I'll also come to you, come to Vaikuntha with you. At that point, Krishna says, no, that's not going to work like that. And he gives him a long, advice and upadesha. That whole advice is called Uddhava Gita, actually. Okay, but Uddhava Gita is not part of, Bhagavatam. It comes in some other text. But there is an abridged version of the Uddhava Gita. And so, in that portion of conversation where Uddhava and Krishna have this discourse, Krishna tells Uddhava about another sannyasi or another yogi who had learnt from some 25 different gurus. Okay, and so this 25 different gurus list is a very interesting list. Okay, so I am just looking for that list of 25 gurus. Pardon me for a minute. Yeah. So, there is when Krishna and Uddhava have this conversation, in that conversation, Krishna tells a story in which a Brahmin and another yogi are talking, and that yogi tells that Brahmin that I have learnt from the following things. He says the earth. I have learned something from the earth. I have learned something from the air or wind. I have learned something from the sky. I have learned something from water, fire, moon, sun, and then a pigeon, and then a python, then the sea or the ocean, from a lamb, and from a fly. You know, this fly which comes and falls into that fire. What is it called? In Tamil, we call it Vittirpuchi. It's not firefly. Firefly is a fly that gives off that light. So this is some kind of a fly which comes and falls into the fire. So that fly. And then I have learned something from the bee that gathers honey. Then I have learned something from the elephant, from the hunter, from the deer, from the fish. And then a lady called Pingala. And then a bird called Gurram. Then a small boy and a small girl, and then a potter, from a snake, from a butterfly, and from a wasp. Kulaviki wasp, isn't it? Wasp. So these are the 25 things, 25 gurus from which I have learnt a lot. So this is a very philosophical portion. Yeah. So it's interesting to see what he learnt from what. Okay. So, he says, from the earth is something on which all of us step and walk, you know. So, we all use the ground to step on and walk, and when we want to construct a building, we even dig up the earth. But the earth is very, very patient and doesn't react. Yeah. So, he says that I learned from the earth that one has to be very patient. No matter what happens to you, no matter what kind of insults are heaped upon you, you should be very cool and patient and not react. That is the learning he got from the earth. Okay? Then, from the mountain, what he has learnt is, there are a lot of trees on the mountain, a lot of useful plants and herbs. And all the rivers generally start from the mountain and they flow down. So he says, anything that is part of the mountain is useful only for others. The mountain itself doesn't benefit from the trees or the fruits of the trees, or, you know, in some of the mountains you also have medicinal plants and herbs. The mountain doesn't benefit from these plants, and the water that flows through the streams and rivers doesn't benefit the mountain itself, it benefits somebody else. So like that, we should be of benefit to others. Whatever we do should be of benefit to others. This is the lesson he learned from the mountain. In fact, there is another shloka in Sanskrit which reflects the same teaching. No? Paropakaraya phalanti vrikshaha, paropakaraya duhanti gavaha, paropakaraya vahanti nadyaha, paropakarartham idam shariram. This is the shloka. So it says, all the cows which give milk, the milk is used by other human beings. You know, the calf itself may get a very small portion of the mother's milk, but the milk doesn't benefit the cow. It benefits all the other people. And all the trees which give fruits, the trees don't eat the fruits. It is the other people who eat the fruit. And similarly, when the river has fresh water running, the river itself doesn't benefit from the river. It's for the other people's benefit. So similarly, our body should be used for the benefit of others. That's the shloka. So this is to show that service to others is to be considered very sacred. Okay? Then, the other portion is a little philosophical. So he says, in the case of air, the third one is air. Even though the air flows through all over the world, and in some places it gets associated with good smell, in some places it associates with some bad foul smell, in some cases it may even go through a forest fire and spreading the fire. So even though it seems to be associated with everything, it really speaking is not associated with anything. So like that, the person should be detached from everything around him. That is the lesson he learned from the air. Okay, so detachment as in emotional detachment, and this emotional detachment is something that is a constant recurring theme in all the Puranas and all the Upanishads and everywhere. So this emotional detachment, it is actually very difficult to develop that quality, and it's worth trying to develop that quality, because once you have that emotional detachment, you would see that you are able to manage the stressful events of your life much better. Whenever somebody gets stressed or depressed, it is more because of a certain emotional attachment that you have to this or that. So by reducing the emotional attachment, you protect yourself from stress and depression and all that. Okay? Then, similarly, for the sky also, it's the same detachment only. The sky is everywhere. In fact, the sky is a much better example on understanding the Chaitanyam. Those who are attending the Bhagavad Gita class will know. We all talk about space, but we really cannot pinpoint to space and say this is space. We all understand at some abstract level what is space. If I say there is space here, you know what I mean. But I can't show you the space. Okay? And then we all say there is a big room with a lot of space and a small room with little space and all that. So we think of space as something contained in a room or an enclosed space. But if you really understand, it is not that the space is contained within the room. It is the room which is contained in space. Because when you talk of space, this whole galaxy and cosmos is in space. And all of the galaxy that you experience, all the stars that you see, they're all in space. So really speaking, space is not in this hall, but this hall is in space. So that requires a kind of switch in thinking, but that's not the point mentioned here. It says just like space is not associated with anything. You really can't cut a portion of space from here and take it anywhere, because you cannot attach space to anything. So like that, you should be detached from all the things that are around you. Okay? Then the yogi, he mentioned a yogi, right? So he says, just like the yogi is helping everybody to, that is not about yogi, this is about the jalam. So jalam, water is a very important element in our life. We are all made of 85% water. Our body is made of water, and we use water for so many things, for cooking food, for taking bath, for drinking, for everything we need water. And so water is a refreshing element. Water brings energy to you, and water makes you fresh. If you have a river with cold water and you take a dip in that water, you feel fresh. So like that, he says, I learned from water that you must help make others fresh and energetic. So you have to contribute to making others energetic and not make them sapped of energy. That is a lesson he learned from water. And from the moon, he says that the moon has a waxing and waning, waning and waxing. From Amavasya to Purnami, it waxes. It kind of becomes slowly bigger, bigger, bigger and bigger, and on full moon day, it becomes the full moon, big, very bright moon. And then for the next 15 days, it is waning. And then it becomes the new moon day and Amavasya, and the cycle continues. So he says, just like the moon just goes through this waxing and waning process, I realize that all the good things and bad things that can happen to us is of a temporary nature, and we should not really mind all those happenings. You should take it in the stride and move on. That is the lesson he learned from the moon. Okay. So, it's actually a very long section, and I would just want to point out to the appropriate chapter in Bhagavatam. If any of you have the access to the Bhagavatam in original, you can refer to 11th Skanda, 7th chapter. Skanda 11, chapter 7. That is where the teachings of all these 25 gurus, actually the shloka says 24, But if you count the number of gurus, it actually becomes 25. So there are 25 entities from which this yogi had learned. And I'm not very sure if going through all the 25 would be of interest to many people. We can do it some other day. If there is a lot of interest, maybe next class I'll catalog everything and come with a list. Today I'm just reading out from the book, so I'm having to search through all the references. If it's of interest, next class we'll spend some 15 minutes on going through all the 25 points. Yeah. So I think with that, I would like to close today's session. If there are any questions, discussions, you can have.
Does this yogi have a name?
It just says Yadu. So that yogi doesn't have a name. You know, in Bhagavatam, it's a style of narrating. You will have a story. In that story, two people will have a conversation. And in that conversation, one story will come. And then again in that story, another story will come. So you'll have a story within a story within a story. It will go to 5-6 levels. So at some point, you will be kind of wondering, where did this story begin? Which level of the story am I? You know, so you will kind of get lost. So it takes a lot of alertness to keep remembering, okay, where did this branch off? Where did the next branch off happen and so on. So that's the style in which Bhagavatam runs. Yes, sir. Skanda 11, chapter 7. Yeah. Yeah.
Kandada had a boon to become a deep Chiranji, that means living forever. Would it be an assignment?
See, again, when somebody says living forever, it is not that he will live in that body, in that position forever. That never happens. Okay, so in all our Vedas and Shastras, there is something called Arthavada or glorification. Okay, Arthavada is a word used in Sanskrit and it means, really speaking, glorification. So to show something as very good, you know, you sometimes exaggerate, you know, its quality. Now you say that, you know, somebody is a pillar of an organization. Okay, that doesn't mean if the fellow leaves the organization, the whole organization will fall flat. Okay, when you say that somebody is a pillar of an organization, it means he's a very important person, he's doing a very good role, and he is being respected and honored for that. Okay, but that doesn't mean he'll be there forever in that position. Okay, so Prahlada being a Chiranjeevi, or, you know, there are supposed to be 7 or 10 Chiranjeevis, Ashwatthama is supposed to be one, and Anjaneya is supposed to be one. In fact, even Vyasa is supposed to be a Chiranjeevi. So you may ask, where are these people? Okay, now one way to understand is that Chiranjeevi is one whose glory will live forever. That is one way to understand. The other way to understand is that, okay, they are living in some form in some loka. You know, in the Shastra, we have 14 lokas. And this I said in the very first class. So this Bhuloka, this earth where we are living, is the middle plane. There are 7 planes below us. And there are 6 planes above us. So there are totally 14 planes of existence. Okay, and each of these planes of existence is very vast and very big. And the physical body you have in this loka is very different from the physical body that you would have in any of the other lokas. Okay, so the people existing in those lokas may or may not be able to perceive us, but we will definitely not be able to perceive the other loka. Okay, so we all have our limitations. So you might think that, you know, Prahlada is existing in some other loka, and really speaking, philosophically, if you ask the question, who am I? What is my real essence? Our real essence is our Chaitanyam, and Chaitanyam never dies. So in that sense, all of us will live forever. Okay, really speaking, all of us will live forever, but not in this physical body, in this form. And you know, when I say that we are all really speaking Chaitanyam, that is at the highest level. Even at one level below, we are all supposed to be Jivas or Atmas. And that Atma is a level of existence. It is capable of independently moving from one body to another, which is what we call Janma. So we are in this body now for 70, 80, 90, whatever years. And we have a date of birth and we have a date of death. Once you die, your jiva just moves on to another body depending on your pava punyam. So that atma which moves from one body to another, that never dies. It is forever existent. So you can think of Prahlada as existing in any of these interpretations. Okay. So because you are still today talking about Prahlada's glory, in one sense, Prahlada is existing because he is existing in our mind. Yeah?
Yeah, you said the soul is going depending upon Parvati. See, I had this thought a long time. The punya or the papa which I am doing, that is I am doing,
mm-hmm.
and not my soul. And according to the punya or papa, how does the soul get benefited or get cursed?
Okay, that question itself is, you know, mixed up in language. So when you say soul, and when you say I, where do you draw the line? Where is the soul ending and where is you beginning? Do you have that clarity? You say, I do the karma and how is my soul getting the benefit or whatever? That was the question.
Hmm.
Let me first rephrase your question so that I got your question right.
Yeah, yeah.
You said, I do my karma and how does my soul get the benefit or a negative effect of that? That's the question.
Hmm.
So tell me, what is you and what is your soul? What is this line of separation between you and your soul?
The body.
You are not your body. That is very obvious.
The physical.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, this is where we introduce what is called Panchakosha Viveka. Okay. Now, your physical body by itself is not capable of doing anything. You know, that's obvious because when a person dies, the body is there, but the person is gone.
Hmm.
Okay, so your body is merely a tool through which the Atma performs its action. The body is only a tool. Are you following me?
Okay.
So there is an Atma and there is a body, and this body is left in this Janma once the Prarabdha is over, and as long as the Atma is in that body, the Atma uses the body as a tool to perform various actions. So, if somebody is killed using a revolver or a knife, will you arrest the revolver or the knife, or will you arrest the person?
Okay.
So, in that example, since the revolver is just a tool, you go after the guy who used the revolver. Similarly, in your case, your body is just a tool. And so the papam and punyam will chase the Atma which was behind the tool to perform the action. Okay, now that Atma which performs the action, really speaking, is not the real Atma. For that you should know what are the other four koshas. Okay, so we talk about, first we tell you there is a sthula shariram which is a physical body, there is a sukshma shariram and there is a karana shariram. And then we tell you that sukshma shariram itself is consisting of pranamaya kosha, Manomaya Kosha and Vijnanamaya Kosha. So we then make this three into five. And then we tell you that you are none of these five. You are neither your Annamaya Kosha, you are neither Pranamaya Kosha, nor Manomaya Kosha, nor Vijnanamaya Kosha, nor Anandamaya Kosha. You are the consciousness which is the witness of all these five koshas. And that witness of all these five koshas has no action. And that is the real Atma. And that is only one. Okay, so this is all of Vedanta explained in 2 minutes. Okay, to understand this, you must spend a lot of time. Okay, so this is essentially what we teach in Bhagavad Gita over 18 chapters. Okay, sir? Thank you.
Jatuji, I'm just thinking out loud here. It's not a question, but we talked about attachment and detachment in the second mountain example, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to contradict this with Bhagavad Gita. In that, Krishna is talking about being attached to your karma.
No.
No.
Okay. Where does he say that? Where does he say that? Tell me.
So, isn't he talking about focus, not on...
Focusing is different from attachment. So, tasmad asakta karyam karma samachara. That's the word you use. Asakta means detached. Tasmad asakta satatam karyam karma samachara. Asakto hyacharan karma paramapnoti purusha. So asaktam means detached, without dependence. So Krishna never tells you to get attached to karma. He says do your karma, but don't get attached.
Maybe I missed out your initial talks. why we, what is the significance of reading Bhagavatam in 7 days, or we say Bhagavatam?
Yeah. Okay. This question has already been covered in the first day. I'll share the lecture recording and you can listen to it. Yeah. Basically, there is a story of Gokarna, which we covered on day one, in which Gokarna gives liberation to his stepbrother, who becomes a Pishacha. And from that Durgati, he brings him to good Gati. And for that, there is a story in which Narada himself tries to revive Bhakti, Jnanam and Vairagyam through a Bhagavata Saptaham. So all that story we covered on day one. So I'll share the lecture recording and...
So this Bhagavatam is before the Prahlada or the story what we have narrated, because Prahlada was learning the Bhagavatam. It means a bit of...
No. See, again, we are falling into the trap of trying to go into research of historicity of Bhagavatam and all that. That's not the idea. Okay. Now, if you really understand the Hindu Vedic time scale, I have said this in some earlier classes also, I repeat it for your benefit. You know, we first have something called Chatur Yuga, and Chatur Yuga means one Krita Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Kali Yuga, and this Chatur Yuga period is 4.32 million years. Okay, and one day of Brahmaji has 2000 Chatur Yugas. So the daytime of Brahmaji is 1000 Chaturyugas and night time of Brahmaji is another 1000 Chaturyugas, and he has 120 years of 365 days, each day is comprising of 2000 Chaturyugas. That is the lifespan of one Brahmaji, and when one Brahmaji's life ends, another Brahmaji comes and this goes on. This is a never ending cycle. This is a cycle that had no beginning also. This is our time scale. So this world gets created, destroyed, created, destroyed, created, destroyed, created, destroyed. Endlessly it keeps going on. So many of these stories which you see in Bhagavatam are supposed to have happened in some Kalpa, in some Chaturyuga, in some Brahmaji's lifetime. You don't know. Okay? So that is one of the confusions that many people have when they read Bhagavatam. You have a lot of things coming back and forth, back and forth. So you wonder who came first. Okay? There's one way of say looking at this is our, we have our life, the time definition in our dharma is so big that you have stories from so many different kalpas. Okay, but drop all that. All these stories are being told to you more to give you a message, and you get the message and drop the story. Once you get the message, it doesn't really matter whether Prahlada existed 1000 years back or 5000 years back or 5000 yugas back. It doesn't matter. All that you need is to take the message. The message is what? Ultimately, all the Puranas in one form or the other, what they say is, look, this world is temporary. All the material wealth and all the position and power and everything that you manage to get is temporary. And temporary means what? It is not just 100 years. It could even be 10,000 yugas, because Hiranyakashipu is supposed to have ruled the earth in that powerful form for something like 1000 Chaturyugas. Imagine, 1000 Chaturyugas means it is almost one full day of Brahma. Yeah. So, he ruled for such a long time, but still he was killed. So the point is, this material world is temporary, and there is no point in running after it. There is a much better way of living this life in such a way that you avoid this rebirth completely. Because in our Shastras, what we say is, no matter what you do, you will keep having another life. That Janma Maranam cycle will continue. If you want to continue in the cycle, all the best. Go ahead. Nobody is stopping you. Okay? We are only talking about those people who are fed up with this life and death cycle and who want to somehow get out of it. So it is addressed to those rare set of people who want to somehow get out of this birth and death cycle and say, okay, I am done with all this birth and death, I am happy now. That is liberation. So we have a concept of liberation where you are not born in any body, in any loka at all. Okay, So all the teachings that you get in the Bhagavatam, in the Puranas, in the Upanishads, in Bhagavad Gita, they are all meant to drive you and to motivate you to walk in that direction. And once you get that message, it doesn't really matter. You know, one of the things I know I wanted to say from this 25 gurus is that it doesn't matter whether what you learn comes from Prahlada or from a python. No, the python example is very good. You know, I didn't touch the python example. In the python example, he says, what I learned from the python, you know, the python doesn't run around looking for prey. You know, it's got a very peculiar character. It will just sit in one place, in one tree or in one hole or wherever. It just sits and sits for how long ever it takes for the next animal to come. Okay, it doesn't run in search of prey. Unlike the eagle, which keeps running around and flying around to look for its prey, the python never walks around because it's very slow to move. It knows that if it goes out somewhere, it will get killed. Somebody will catch it, and so it just hides around somewhere. And the moment a small goat or deer comes, it just falls on it and catches hold of it. Okay, so what this man says, I learned from the python, is in a python, there is no guarantee that the next meal will come in 24 hours or 48 hours. It may have to wait for 2 years also for the next prey to come. Okay, so like the python, I am not going to run after food and for my sense pleasures. If something comes along my way, I'll take it. Otherwise, I will sit wherever I am and happily be what I am. So that is what he learned from python. So that is, in fact, one of the reasons I wanted to cover that section was that python example is very important, because today, if you see, everybody is running after everything. You know, somebody is running after money, somebody is running after possession, somebody is running after power. All of us are running after something or the other. And we really don't know, once we get that, what do we do next? You know, very often successful people have this problem. They are successful and they don't know what to do next with that success. And so they want more of what they achieved. So Bill Gates made 10 million and then he made 100 million and he made 1,000 million. Okay? So he keeps on making money. At one point, Bill Gates will get bored. That's why he started giving to charity. Okay, so at one point, people will start asking themselves, okay, what am I doing? What am I achieving by all this running around? And when that question comes, you need some answer to tell you what is the direction you have to take. And that message is what you get in Bhagavatam and Puranam and all that. It says this material world is temporary. You will get what you are destined to get. And you will not get even one paisa more than what you are destined to get. Okay? That doesn't mean you should sit at home and not do anything. You have to go out and do your duty, but do your duty without that greed and hunger pushing you, because it is that greed and hunger that pushes you to break laws and become unethical and cheat people and do all kinds of negative things. So when you don't have control over your desire and when you allow greed to overwhelm you, that is when society has problems. Whether you have problem or not is a different thing. Society has problems. Society has problems because of the overly greedy people who are after money. Grabbing. Everybody is grabbing. Yeah, so that is not a healthy thing for the society as a whole. So what do you do? Suppose you decide, okay, from tomorrow I'm not going to work. And you sit at home. And if you sit at home, your wife will have a problem. Okay, so what do you do in such a way that you're also at peace and your wife is also at peace? So all the Dharma Shastras talk about a certain way of life, a certain set of values that you can follow, which will keep you at peace and will keep the society at peace. Okay, and once you get that message, it doesn't matter where the story came from. Yeah, maybe the answer was too long, your question didn't warrant that, but I just kind of went off on a tangent. Yeah, is that okay?
Yeah.
Thank you. Done? Can we close the call? No more questions? Anyone from the conference? No one. Okay.
No, it's okay. Thank you.
Sorry?
No, it's fine. Hello? Thank you. Thank you. No,
okay. Om Purnamadaha. Purnamidam. Purnat Purnamudachyate. Purnasya Purnamadaya. Purnamevavasishyate. Sarvesham Swastir Bhavatu.
Sarvesham.
सर्वेषां शान्तिर्भवतु, सर्वेषां पूर्णं भवतु, सर्वेषां मङ्गलं भवतु, ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ओके, ऐ विल् क्लोज़ द ब्रिज् नौ, थैंक यू।